welcome to Hype, episode 161. My name is Selena, and I'm joined by Pam for another week of entertainment news stories. Yay!
Yay!
We're so excited to be here. We just want to say at the top of the show that we're sorry we didn't have an episode last week, but we are back now with episode 161, and we're going to be breaking down all the latest entertainment news stories that have been going on. A lot has been going on. We have a lot to get through, so we hope you guys are ready to hear about some news. As always, before we start the show, we just want to remind you of the contact information. You guys have been sending us some great emails and feedback, and we would love to get your thoughts on this week's entertainment news stories and your thoughts on the TV shows. The TV season is starting back up and all the big movies that are premiering. We want to hear all your thoughts. You can get in contact with us in a number of ways, including via email, which is hype@hypeable.com. You can find us on Twitter at hypeablehype. You can find us on Instagram at hypeablehype and on Tumblr, which is hypepodcast.tumblr.com. And you can find us on Hypeable, which is hypable.com. And you can leave your comments in the podcast section under the most recent episode of Hype. And Hypeable is, of course, also where we write all the news. Basically, me and Pam, we write a lot of the news that we also talk about.
It's really
here.
Funny that we do that. Yeah.
It's like a snake eating its own tail at this point.
That's great.
And you can read so much more than what we talk about on the show, but we try to pick out the best and the most exciting and the most interesting to dive deeper into for discussions. We also have a Patreon, which is patreon.com/hypepodcast. And we actually have a few announcements about our Patreon here at the start of the show. First of all, every week to accompany our normal hype, we do a bonus discussion episode that goes up on our Patreon. And this week's discussion is going to be super interesting because we're actually going to do, at the request of one of our listeners, Laura, we're going to be diving a bit deeper into the fall TV season and picking out some of the ones that we are most eagerly anticipating and talking a little bit about what is generally on offer this year on TV and streaming. And we also have a couple of bonus discussion episodes that for the past couple of episodes that you might have noticed are not on the Patreon, but they will be very shortly. So keep an eye on that one. We got a little bit of a backlog on there, but they're all recorded and almost ready to go.
Yeah, my plan is, that's my bad. My plan is to have them up by Sunday. Selena and I were talking about this before the show. There's a bit of a mix up, but I'm going to fix it. Don't worry. You guys hang tight. And I appreciate you all for not hating me because it's my fault.
Pam the podcast. Can she fix it? Pam the podcast. Yes, she can.
By Sunday. Monday morning, so depending on where you are. My plan is to just hunker down in my house and just not go outside until it's fixed.
Fantastic. Well, that's going to be great. So the patrons, you have a couple of bonus discussions to look forward to, and hopefully you will enjoy those. I think they're evergreen. One of them, at least, is about Gossip Girl. So
that's still timely because this week
that's
was
ongoing. Yeah, exactly.
They are all evergreen. Actually, we try to do that with our things. So.
Exactly. Yeah. And hopefully you will get something out of this one this week as well. And we also just wanted to let you know, if you are a patron, if you're not, then, you know, you can still consider being a patron, or you can just enjoy the regular show. But if you are a patron, we're going to be making some changes to the tiers. Specifically, we're going to try to make more things available for like the $1 and $2 levels. And we haven't planned it out exactly yet, but we just wanted to let you know so that you can stay in the loop. And we're going to be making some changes to the video, the way we do video, and making them available for the lower tiers as well. And we're going to hopefully have some more content for you, especially as we gear up to do our Merlin rewatch, much hyped Merlin rewatch that we will start doing. And we'll have more on that on the Patreon as well, because we know a lot of you are excited for that, and we are excited for that, and we want to bring you some extra material, including maybe a few commentaries and a few maybe prolonged discussions, or maybe diving into a bit more spoilery conversation to supplement what will probably be a spoiler-free discussion as we go through the series on the main show. We will let you know about all of that, but we really, really appreciate your support on Patreon. If we don't say it enough, we really mean it. It means a lot to us, and it will allow us to do some things that we otherwise wouldn't be allowed to or able to do for the show. And hopefully it will all benefit you guys in the end and give you some extra content as well to enjoy. So it's obviously also very important that you let us know what you enjoy about the Patreon and what you would like to hear or see more of, because, you know, we're open to all of your suggestions, and we try to do, you know, what we think you guys want. So let us know anyway, and we will work with you to make this the best show it can be. And that goes for the regular hype show as well, which we are gonna jump right into because we have a lot of fun things to discuss. We've got some movie. I think we're going all across the entertainment spectrum today because we've got some movies and some TV shows and some music and some books and all kinds of fun stuff. So why don't you take it away in How We Hype and tell you what we've been doing in fandom for these past 2 weeks?
Okay, sure. First of all, I just wanted to say that since we haven't been on for a while, if you are suffering or saddened by some of the horrendous natural disasters that have taken place across the United States and in Latin America, my heart feels for you. My family is from Mexico on one side and very close to where the earthquake hit earlier this week. So I hope that you're all doing well and that all of your friends and your loved ones are doing well. And I just want you guys to know that we always have you and your extended family friends in our thoughts when things like this happen, because they're just awful. So with that said, now that I've brought the show down, I have some music recommendations. They're not like super sad, but they're also not super upbeat. I've been really into like atmospheric sub pop, like indie pop type stuff lately. So I have some new stuff and some old stuff, but that's kind of like the realm in which all of these kind of lie. So the first artist I want to recommend is Anna of the North, who just released their first full-length EP like 2 weeks ago, I think, so fairly fresh. And I really like the songs Always and Someone. And then the Japanese House also released an EP earlier this year, not very long ago. I really like the song Saw You in a Dream. And then Oldie But a Goodie, Beach House, is wonderful as well. And I've been listening to the songs Safe Space and Myth a lot. So kind of all in that realm of like dreamy, synthy, atmospheric, like pleasing to the ears, mellow pop. And yeah, in general, when fall, autumn comes around, I tend to kind of gravitate towards things that are mellow, but just really kind of soothing in a strange way. So yeah, if you're looking for something like that to kind of take you into the transition of the next season, highly recommend all of those.
Awesome. The name Anna of the North immediately makes me want to check it out.
It's a great album. I really, really like it a lot. I you know what? Honestly, I don't know very much about the artist. I'm not sure if it's one person or a band. They're from Norway, either way. And I thought that they had had, or she had had, a bunch of albums come out before this, but I guess this is like first full length EP. Been getting a lot of traction like in the underground type publication scene. So yeah. Highly recommend.
Nice. It's great. Yeah. Never heard of them, but I will check them out for sure. It's definitely a time for mellow music, and you know, your recs are always good, so I'm sure the listeners will enjoy those as well. My How We Hype this week is actually continuing a theme from the past couple of weeks, where I have obviously been reading the Winner's Curse trilogy, as I was talking to you guys about a couple of weeks ago. And I said on the last show that I would have finished the trilogy, and I have. Yay to me, golden star. It's the Winner's Curse is the book by Marie Rutkowski, which follows a girl named Kestrel, who is this member of this group of people, or this people that invaded and enslaved another group of people in this fantasy realm. And she and Aaron, who is a man, or a young man who was one of the people that were enslaved, they sort of grow up in this regime, and they begin to figure out, obviously he already figures it out, and Kestrel as well begins to figure out that, you know, it's pretty terrible, obviously, and that they need to basically revolt and overthrow this regime. And it's really, really interesting, both to follow obviously Aaron's battle to save his people, and Kestrel's battle or inner sort of struggle with her people and her family versus what she knows to be right, and the love that she develops for Aaron, obviously, because it's a YA love story, so that's what happens. And I finished the trilogy, and overall, I think that it was a really enjoyable, satisfying read. I really liked the first book. The second book, I did not enjoy. I felt like it was extremely stagnant. It was like the entire book was very drawn out and kept the action sort of at bay, which I guess was kind of the point of the book, but at the end, it kind of fell flat for me. It was kind of boring. But once I got to the end of the second book and then moved into the third book, the plot really began to pick up, and I really, really, really enjoyed the third and final book in the series. And I think now that it's completed, it's definitely, you know, I feel like I'm so often disappointed by this type of book, but this one didn't disappoint me. I thought it was really good, and I thought the relationship between Kestrel and Aaron is actually probably one of the best written YA romance stories that I think I've ever read. I was very impressed by the way that it was done, and by the way that their characters were handled individually. Like, they weren't boring when they were apart, and their relationship didn't feel forced, and it didn't feel like the author secretly wanted to go in a different directions like you sometimes feel with YA. But it was just really, really good. Like, I can't really say anything besides the fact that I really enjoyed it. And this is kind of funny, but, like, you know, remember when I was talking about the Raven Cycle and I basically convinced myself it was a Marauders AU? For this one, I began to read it as accidentally as the 100 AU.
That's really funny. That's amazing. You know what? Okay, but, like, mm-hmm. Side note, sorry for hijacking your Howie hype. I was at coffee shop 2 weeks ago, and I was talking to somebody about the Emmys and how, like, there's a lot of, like, snubbing that happens during the Emmys, and then, like the CW never really gets its just rewards for some things. And yeah. And this lady was like, I hate to interject into your conversation, but since you're talking about kick-ass female characters, have you seen The 100? And I was like, new best friend, who are you? Way. And she was like, yeah. She's like, my boyfriend's over there ordering coffee. He's the one that turned me on to it.
Oh my god.
I was like, oh my god, a wild The 100 fan in the open. What? I've never met anybody, like, ever, aside from our little community, that is, like, into this show.
That's incredible. I know. Yeah. Oh my gosh.
Yeah.
So that's so cool. Did you tell her about
Hype Podcast? I did. Like,
did you?
Well, I told her that I do a podcast with you, and that you're, like, a huge The 100 fan. You're like, you've spearheaded the content, you know. We have done recaps for all the episodes, and so she wanted to check them out, and I was like, yeah, you can find us online. And did a little plug for the show, but that's really funny. You just, like, triggered the memory. And then she told me that's about so this funny. Other show with kick-ass female ladies that's on Netflix that's Canadian. And I can't remember what it's called, but I'm going to find it, and then we'll discuss it, because I feel like it's up interesting. Our alley.
Was it also, like, a survival show, or was it, like, Glow or something?
No, she said it was a survival show. It's like, okay, a sci-fi type thing, because she says that's all she watches is like sci-fi.
Oh my stuff. God. Who is I know. This woman? I wish Hello, I are you listening?
I hope so. Hello, lady from the coffee shop.
Be on the podcast? Oh my God. Coffee Shop AU.
Coffee Shop AU, which that's Pam amazing. Finds her new best friend.
That's fantastic. I love that. And I want to know, I want her to watch list because I feel like, or her watching list because I feel like I would love it.
I know.
That's such a funny story. I love that.
I was like, this is Selena because she literally said, she's like, I'm all for the badass female ladies. And I was like, have you seen The 100? Have yes. I seen The 100? Like, yes. Anyway, oh tell me gosh. More about how The 100 correlates to the winner's curse.
Okay. Anyway, I feel like I can't top that one. But no, I was just going to say that, like, as I was reading The Winner's Curse, I could not, like, the correlation between Aaron and Bellamy and Clark and Kestrel is pretty undeniable. You know, not only are they described as looking very similar, but also their personalities are very, very similar, like extremely similar, to the point where, especially Kestrel, the way that she's described is just very, very, very Clark Griffin. And it struck me, and it's, I haven't really read, like, unlike Marauders, where I feel like I'm very sort of familiar with the genre of fanfic, I haven't really read a lot of The 100 fanfic, certainly not Bellark fanfic. So, like, I was like, am I just obsessed with The 100? Like, what is happening? What is it? But I really do think if you're listening, you're a Bellark fan, I think you might really enjoy this love story, because it basically does read to me like an AU for that pairing. And then in the final book, towards the end of it, one of the other characters stands up, and at this point I was already convinced of the 100 AU, my theory, and then he stands up and he uttered an old Hirani expression which went, people of the 100. And I was just like, what? And now, like, I'm convinced that there's fanfic everywhere. Basically, fanfic has ruined books for me, because now I'm just looking for the what it's secretly a fanfic of, and I keep uncovering conspiracies.
I mean, this is honestly why I get so confused between what is fanon and what is canon in Harry Potter, because I just don't know anymore. I've read too much fanfiction in my time.
It might as well be canon. Yeah, like, it's so funny. The line is so blurred.
Yeah, like, I think so about how much I love the Marauders, and then I realize that I might not even really love the Marauders.
You love the fanfic version.
I love
the
generally accepted by most of the fandom headcanon of the Marauders.
Yes. Yeah, there's some interesting, we don't have time to dive into it now, but this might be a good bonus discussion feature, because there's a lot to dive into there. But anyway, yeah, the Winner's Trilogy, very, very enjoyable. I really enjoyed it, and I felt like I knew the characters already, so that didn't hurt, and I highly, highly recommend it. Now, we are going to move on to the news now, where we have a bunch of stories, and I'm going to... Basically, the way that the story selection was turned out this week is that we have a few movie news at the top, as we always do, that I have all of those, and then we're going to move into television when Pam pretty much has all of those. So it's a little bit of a less of a back and forth this week and more of a half-half division, but hopefully it should be okay. And the first story is actually one that broke 2 weeks ago now, and I released a video on Patreon available to all patrons sharing my immediate reactions on this. But now that some time has passed, I feel like it will be a really interesting discussion, and I'm very excited to hear what Pam thinks about this one. So Star Wars 9 obviously lost its director a couple of weeks back, and on the last show we did, we talked about the possibility of either Rian Johnson or J.J. Abrams stepping back in to finish off the trilogy. And now we have learned that Lucasfilm has brought in J.J. Abrams to both write and direct the final movie in the third trilogy. And obviously J.J. Abrams not only directed The Force Awakens, but he was actually pretty instrumental in putting this new saga together. And he and Kathleen Kennedy worked very closely to basically develop this story, so it makes sense based on what we talked about in the last episode about how Lucasfilm is keeping things very close. You know, they're guarding their material and clearly have a hard time letting directors come in and take too much ownership of it. So it makes in my opinion, it makes total sense for them to get Abrams back. And honestly, my immediate reaction was relief. And I'm very curious to hear what you think, because I know the internet has a lot of opinions about this one.
Yeah, okay, honestly, because we talked about this so much, and I don't know if it's because this show... I like to think that we think outside the box when we come to do hype, but then sometimes I'm hit with, like, internet feels, and I'm just so confused by where they came from, because I was really excited about this, and I felt like it's a safe choice, but I would rather a safe choice than somebody that's going to come in and, like, F shit up, you know? So I was a little confused by the fact that some people were not very pleased by this. Does that make sense? Like, I was a little surprised that the internet had, like, more than one opinion. Like, I could understand, like, meh, okay, and, like, oh, my MG, yes. But I had no idea people were going to have negative reactions to this, because we already know J.J. Abrams' track record. It's going to be a good movie, so I have no problems with this. Like, I was happy to get confirmation, because I felt like this was our best safe bet.
Honestly, yeah, I had the exact same reaction. And actually, some of our listeners had the same reactions we did as well. Jewel wrote into us and said she had a huge sigh of relief when she learned this news. And Nikki L said that she feels way more optimistic about the movie now that J.J. Abrams has been announced. So maybe that's just a general, like, hype bubble of positivity. I don't know. Maybe, like, if you're not excited, hype listeners, you should write in and tell us to sort of balance out this opinion. But as for me, I feel exactly the same way. Like, we talked about this a couple of weeks ago, even though we were kind of assuming that it would be Rian Johnson, because that was kind of the rumor at the time. But I feel like, I mean, obviously, yes, we are all in agreement that we need more diverse directors and storytellers in Hollywood. Like, obviously, that is a given fact. But I think, you know, it is true, but it is also true that we have to judge each project on an individual merits basis. And I think, and again, this echoes some of what we said last week, but I really feel like in the case of Star Wars, in light of all of these director shakeups and the obvious fact that Lucasfilm is guarding itself and is keeping its, like, it's kind of putting a cap on the creative forces, you know, it doesn't want an auteur Star Wars film, and it doesn't want to take a chance on an untested director, because you can see that's why they let Colin Trevorrow go. It's why they let some of the other directors go. It's because they don't want someone that they A, can't control, and B, that hasn't been tested yet, right? So if they were going to take a chance on someone, they would have kept Colin Trevorrow. So the fact that people are disappointed that they didn't pick, like, say, a woman, for example, which in theory, yes, Rey's story would be amazing if it was directed by a woman. But at the end of the day, the only women who, and this is a problem, but it's not, like, it's not necessarily Lucasfilm's fault, that the only women that really have the credibility and the, what should you say, like, the star power is the wrong word, but it's kind of a similar word that I'm searching for, of directing, like, a blockbuster superhero type movie right now is Patty Jenkins and Ava DuVernay. And as far as we know, they're both busy. So really, at the end of the day, like, if they were going to bring in anyone new, it's very likely that this would also have been a man. So I mean, just playing those odds, first of all, I think we got super lucky. And then I also just think, just to echo what Pam said again, is that when the first movie was really good, and unless you don't think the first movie was good, in which case I understand the frustration, but the first movie was competent, it was a success, it proved, and this is what I feel like people are sort of overlooking, the fact that the Force Awakens was so hugely successful, and the fact that it played it a little bit safe, I feel like that really helped Rey and Finn and Poe, this really diverse new Star Wars saga, become accepted. You know what I mean? Like, I understand that it's two different fights to have women and like minorities behind the camera and in front of the camera, but we can't really underestimate or undervalue the fact that The Force Awakens and the new Star Wars trilogy is hugely diverse compared to what we've seen in the past, and that it was extremely successful, and that J.J. Abrams had so much to do with making it such a success. And I think just knowing that the last movie is probably not going to flop, because why would it? J.J. Abrams is a competent director who's proven that he can take a Star Wars film and make it good. I think that that's really good for, like, quote-unquote us, you know, who are wanting more diversity in Hollywood. Because if this movie can do well, and if this trilogy can do well with this kind of a cast, then that bodes well for future movies like this, just like it bodes well for female-led superhero movies directed by women that Patty Jenkins did such a good job with Wonder Woman, you know? Like, they both, I feel like they both have a lot of value. I'm sorry, I talked for so long there.
That's okay. I kind of did that right before you started. I totally agree. I think that, I don't know, it's like so hard, but you're right, it is definitely a case-by-case basis, and I think that in many ways, people like Patty Jenkins, Ava DuVernay, they're paving the way for, you know, and yeah, a lot of other women too, like Kathryn Bigelow, Sofia Coppola, like all of these women, like they're doing what they can. Like, but the thing about like diversity too is like, it's like, I think that when we talk about diversity in Hollywood, we get too hung up on trying to diversify one specific aspect. And you have to think about like, I'm getting a little bit ahead of myself, but this is like my problem too with like the Emmys, where like the common misconception is to say like, oh, Oscar so white, for example, it's probably a better example, means that we need to diversify like the Black recipients or the Black nominees. Like, yeah, that's one aspect, but like then you have like the Asian, you know, Asian, Hispanic, Middle Eastern, queer, you know, like all transgender, non-binary, like all of these different groups that are not represented. So I think that like if like, I don't think that we should, bringing it back to Star Wars, like the fact that they put like a Black man in a leading role and like a Latino man in a leading role, that's not something that we should take away from the franchise just because they're directors are all white men, you know?
Yeah, I agree. Like, more than one thing can be true at the same time.
Right.
Like, one sort of quote-unquote lacking thing doesn't undo all the good things.
Exactly. And I don't really know where I'm going and with this. And vice versa. But yes. I feel like we bring this up every once in a while where it's like, it's okay to demand more or to want better.
But I mean,
like, you also can't just, like, you don't want to fight so hard that you end up pushing things back instead of moving things forward, because gradual progress is still progress. So maybe, maybe it's not, like, maybe it's J.J. Abrams for, like, this new, like, Star Wars trilogy, but maybe it's a woman or like, somebody else for an anthology, because, like, Disney has a lot of plans for Star Wars as a franchise. So it doesn't necessarily mean that we'll never see it, even if we don't see it in this film. So.
Exactly. This J.J. Abrams is going to be in for the final movie. He's going to make it a success, a safe success, but a success with the story that he helped develop. So it's going to track clearly. It might go down in history as the most, like, the best Star Wars trilogy. Like, we don't know. It's possible. It's possible now, because it's definitely not going to be a mess. And that's important. So Rey's story, Rey and Finn and Poe's story, is going to be remembered as being successful. That is going to help future stories starring diverse people, for lack of a better term, in the lead roles. And it's also going to help people behind the camera coming to tell these stories, even if that's not the case for this particular story. Like, I really do think, in terms, like, just speaking in terms of the quote-unquote value of diversity value, I think that this is good because we know the movie is going to be good. And I think the moment that they let Colin Trevorrow go, like, it would have been different if Lucasfilm hadn't been in the position that it's been in, where it's firing directors left and right, Disney in general, Marvel as well. Like, if that hadn't been the case, then I think our reaction would have been different. But under the circumstances, then I think that it's going to be great. And just to get back to J.J. Abrams specifically, because obviously it's also just a case of, you know, remembering that he is a person and that he has specific talents as well. He's not just a piece on a board. I love J.J. Abrams. I think what J.J. Abrams does is a great job. And that also obviously informs my opinion, because some people maybe are not as enthused about J.J. Abrams. But I think that he is fantastic. And I think that it is amazing that for the first time maybe in his career, he is actually going back to finish something he started. Because that hasn't been the case.
Oh my god, that's so true.
Lost and like whatever.
That's
the hell,
so true.
That he starts.
He ends up like executive producing, and then that's it.
Yes, I mean, that's fantastic, and I think he has such a brilliant mind, and I love the kind of stuff that he does, and I love his character work, and I love his female characters. To be honest with you, I think that they are fantastic. Sydney Bristow, most of all. But you know, this is good. I'm happy, and I'm happy that. Clearly, Kathleen Kennedy and J.J. Abrams have a great collaborative process, and they've made something really good together, and I'm glad they get to finish it out together. And I hope Michael Giacchino comes back, because why not?
Cosign.
If what's his face, Williams is not going to do it. I don't know. It's going to be great. I'm excited.
Yeah, I think it's going to be amazing. I agree.
Yes. End of the show. We have nothing else to talk about. That was it. We spent all the time on that. Anyway, as I said at the top of this little mini discussion, that we are aware that this is just our opinion. So if you have a different one, please write into us and tell us, because we want to make sure that we maybe get some different viewpoints on, because it seems like most of the internet is like against us on this one. So let's hear why. But briefly moving on to something that kind of correlates to what we were just talking about, but which is, I think everyone is in agreement that this is amazing, is that Patty Jenkins has officially been confirmed to be directing the second Wonder Woman movie. And this was actually another thing I was going to say. Sorry, I can't stop talking about Star Wars, thank God. But it was that you're seeing more and more trend in Hollywood as well, that they are bringing original directors back to do the sequels. So that's why you need women in at the ground level. Anyway, that was just a little side point that I had. But Patty Jenkins is doing Wonder Woman 2 with Gal Gadot, and it's fantastic. And she has gotten a massive pay raise that still doesn't put her quite as high as Zack Snyder for Man of Steel, but definitely gets her up there. She was originally, if you remember, a replacement for Michelle McLaren for the first one. She made $1 million on the first movie, and for the second one she will be making fees in the high seven figures. So great for her. So 7 to 9 million, that's a lot of money. My god, the numbers that we're working with in these Hollywood productions are pretty outrageous. But great for women everywhere, and I'm very happy, and I'm excited to see what she does with the sequel.
Yeah, this is so weird, because I feel like this was breaking news, but then it almost didn't feel like breaking news, because they had been hinting around this for a while. But it's nice to get actual confirmation, and it's amazing that that they're keeping the pay rate actually equal. You know, it's not like, oh, it was equal to what we paid so-and-so in 2001. Like, no, it's like actually, you know what I mean? It's like there's no like, it's not like equal is not a euphemism. It's actually like they're actually doing it, which is great.
Yeah. And this is ridiculous that like sometimes I still shake my head. Like, it's ridiculous that it wouldn't be equal by default. You know what I mean? But every bit of progress is great. And then I'm quickly moving on to the final bit of movie news that we have, which is that the first trailer for the Tomb Raider movie starring Alicia Vikander, we're keeping it girl themed this week, has been released. So we finally get to see what Alicia Vikander's Lara Croft looks like. And I mean, have you seen this trailer?
I haven't.
Okay.
Tell me about it.
Well, I wanted to bring it up just because I feel like, and it's interesting because it actually kind of goes hand in hand with the Jumanji trailer that was also released this week, which actually the Lara Croft movie trailer, it looks like a video game movie. Like, it is really funny how the special effects look Like, she almost looks like a video game character in the long shots, and you almost have to assume that that's on purpose, because it's actually, it looks kind of badly done. And she's, you know, she's dodging things and jumping over things and just generally behaving like a video character, game character, and I think that's hilarious. The movie looked pretty so-so. I think that Alicia Vikander, dare I say it, is slightly overhyped, in my opinion, so I'm not, like, super hugely into her starring as Lara Croft necessarily, but I do think that female-led movies like this are always great, and it does seem like it's a bit of a step up, this adaptation, from the ones with Angelina Jolie, so I am cautiously optimistic. And as for the Jungle, Jumanji trailer, I was actually kind of annoyed to find that I thought it looked pretty funny, so... Damn it, Dwayne Johnson, you got me again.
I mean, I know you're mostly upset about his comments regarding Karen Gillan, which are understandable. But, like, do you, in general, do you have beef with Dwayne Johnson?
No, I think he's great.
Okay.
I was like, literally,
if it was like one of those things where it was like, oh, he's just been annoying you for so long, and that was like the icing on the cake. It's like, that's it. So.
Oh my god, no. Yeah. I find The Rock for president. Like, I don't care. I think I have no beef with The Rock. I just found the Karen Gillan's skimpy outfit in this movie annoying. But you know what's funny about this Jumanji one is that they're actually doing a little bit of a gender swap with one of the girls that is being transformed into a video character. She turns into Jack Black's character. So that's kind of fun, I guess, you know, a little bit of a subversion there. But other than that, I'm pretty sure I'm going to take my brother to see this, and he's going to think it's hilarious. So yeah, that's one to watch. And that brings us to the end of the movie news, and we're going to move on to television.
Amazing.
Something happened in television this week.
Oh, I wonder what it could be. All right. No more time for jokes. The Emmys were this past weekend, and felt like, I don't know if I was just really tired or what, but I did feel like they dragged a little bit. But that's okay, because they actually awarded some very deserving people some awards for, like, the first time in a very long time. First and foremost, we should talk about The Handmaid's Tale, which, like, almost completely swept all the categories they were nominated for. They won Outstanding Drama. Elizabeth Moss won Lead Actress in a Drama. Yay! Alexis Bledel won Guest Actress in a Drama.
Oh my god.
Yeah, it was really great. And Anne Dowd won Supporting Actress in a Drama for The Handmaid's Tale. And this category was stacked because she was up against Samira Wiley, who many of you will know from Orange is the New Black, was also in The Handmaid's Tale. Uzo Aduba, who is in Orange is the New Black.
She deserved it, honestly.
Yeah, she was so good. But, like, all of these actresses in here, Millie Bobby Brown was, like, a crowd favorite to win. Chrissy Metz, because This Is Us is, like, taking over the world. And also Tandy Newton from Westworld. So it's a really big deal that she won, but it was definitely deserved. And then I also want to give a shout out to some of the other actors and actresses that won. Donald Glover picked up his first Emmy ever for Atlanta, for directing Atlanta, and that was a really big milestone for him. Riz Ahmed won as well, and he's the first man of Asian descent to win for lead actor in a drama.
Yay!
Donald Glover's the first Black man to win for directing a comedy, which is crazy to think about that. Sterling K. Brown, who is, say what you will about This Is Us, but they're so lucky to have him, and he's amazing. he is the first Black man to win lead actor in a drama since 1998. And my favorite winner of the night, which is, like, you know, all of these people are amazing, was Lena Waithe, who won for writing the Thanksgiving episode with Aziz Ansari for Master of None. And this is just such a huge win for not only the LGBTQIA community, but also for the Black community, but also for women. It's just, and her speech was so amazing. If you have not watched her speech, highly recommend YouTubing that and checking it out, because she had some beautiful things to say. And also, even if you don't watch Master of None, watch the Thanksgiving episode of season 2, because that episode is so, so wonderful. The show is, like, so great. But if you only watch one episode in season 2, that is the one to watch. Not just because it won the Emmy, but just because, like, it deserves all the praise that it's gotten since it premiered on Netflix.
Yeah, I'm really glad that The Handmaid's Tale did so well. I think that I was blown away by that series when I saw it. I thought all aspects of it were fantastic. And it says a lot about the environment in Hollywood and politics at the moment that this is a series that strikes such a chord. I'm also a little bit like vindictively glad that Westworld didn't really get anything, because honestly, I feel like Westworld is one of those series, like, no offense to you, anyone who likes it, but I feel like it's one of the ones that kind of piggybacks off of the success of similar series that are actually genuinely clever, whereas I feel like Westworld kind of feeds on its own mystique factor rather than bothering to actually develop these great mysteries. I was really taken by a quote by the showrunners who said that basically whenever they would like go to Reddit and read people's theories, and if they figured it out, then they would like change the story. So, and I was like, well, you can't do that. That's so, that like calls you out on your own like lack of thought through. So that always bothered me. So for that reason alone, I'm glad that it didn't do super well. But I'm, no, basically, like, I'm happy for The Handmaid's Tale. I'm happy for all of these people winning these so, so deserved awards. And it's amazing that we still have so many firsts. But it's great that they're coming. You know, it is one of those things we can't underestimate, the fact that and I think social media has been so great in this regard, just drawing attention to all of these people that have been overlooked for so long and are finally sort of being noticed and being honored, and it's great. It's fantastic. All right, so moving on to something slightly less fantastic, a little TV news over from across the pond, Amy Pond, tying it in, and the Doctor Who spin-off Class by Patrick Ness, which I was really excited about because it had an amazing first season, has unfortunately been cancelled. So it joins my, you know, along with Crazy Head, it joins my list of shows that were canceled too soon. Unfortunately, like, they have decided. We kind of knew this already because Patrick Ness had kind of been hinting at it on Twitter, but it became official last week that it will not be reserved. It will not return for a season two. And it's really sad. BBC Three representatives said, basically said, which I find really frustrating, said, there was nothing wrong with it. I thought Patrick did a great job. He explored an amazing world. And honestly, it didn't really land for us on BBC Three. Some shows don't, and I have to make decisions about what we're going to do from a drama point of view. So basically,
I really, like,
it was a great show. He just didn't want it.
Sometimes I love the BBC, and then sometimes I hate the BBC because I don't think mm-hmm. they really understand what... specifically what the younger audience is looking for, you
right.
know?
Yeah.
Which is unfortunate.
And I guess it didn't really, I guess the problem with Class, and we kind of knew this when it was going on, was it never really found its audience. But I think, you know, that's not the show's fault. There was plenty of audience there to be found, I think, for the show. But unfortunately, they didn't really bother giving it a proper chance to grow. So that's the end of the line for Class. Really, really unfortunate, but what can you do? These things happen. Class is dismissed. Class is canceled indefinitely.
That's good.
I don't know. Thanks.
Well, Class is in session for a very notable teenage witch soon. The CW announced earlier this week that Sabrina the Teenage Witch is officially getting her own series on the CW, set to be shot for the 2018-2019 season, so we won't have very much longer to wait to see this come to fruition. This is really interesting because, as we've talked about before on the show, Sabrina the Teenage Witch is one of the most popular characters to come from the actual Archie comics, which have been around for like decades and decades. So everybody was kind of wondering if perhaps she'd make an appearance in Riverdale. And while there is still the possibility of seeing a crossover, because they do exist in the same like print universe at least, it sounds like they've decided to just give her own show, which I think actually makes a lot of sense, because while Riverdale deals with some darker undertones, throwing a supernatural element into things like is going to completely change the rules of the universe, as it were. So Sabrina's going to exist on her own for now, and it's basic. It's what do they say? Not your mother's Sabrina the Teenage Witch. This is going to be much darker than the 1990s version, which starred Melissa Joan Hart. It's set to be titled "The Chilling Adventures of Sabrina." And if you go on Hypeable, you can see this image of her. It's like a sketch, and there's like blood behind her and she's floating and she looks super sinister. And the network released a little blurb about what people can expect from this new show, which reads, "The new project reimagines the origin and adventures of Sabrina the Teenage Witch as a dark coming-of-age story that traffics in horror, the occult, and of course, witchcraft. Totally in the vein of Rosemary's Baby and The Exorcist, this adaptation finds Sabrina wrestling to reconcile her dual nature, half-witch, half-mortal, while standing against the evil forces that threaten her, her family, and the daylight world humans inhabit." So this is kind of interesting. I feel like horror, not even because it is killing it at the box office, but like horror is really having a moment. We kind of saw that back when R.I.P. Damien kind of, you know, premiered. After that, we had like The Exorcist on Fox, which is still going on. Like a lot of these, the newer shows that are being greenlit are kind of in like that, they kind of teeter along that horror genre. And it looks like the CW is looking to get their foot into the door of this new trend, which I think is really interesting. And I think this is going to do really well on the CW. It sounds really interesting. I'll be checking it out, but we'll see what happens.
Yeah, it is going to be interesting. I have to admit, like, I'm kind of a little bit like falling out of love with the CW a little bit at the moment. I feel like a couple of years ago, it had a lot of good things going for it. But I think sort of with the arrival of the DC verse and also, you know, obviously Riverdale, which, you know, I'm not a huge fan of, to put it mildly, I think they are kind of falling into a little bit of a formula type of developing shows where they have like a quote unquote ensemble of teens or young people. And there's like one main hero and then there's like a little bit of a darker sidekick and a usually blonde love interest and like some other people, and it's very sort of, whether it's Arrow or even Supergirl when it went to the CW undergone some like CW-fication that I feel like made it worse, and Riverdale and The Flash, and it's all kind of very almost like the same show. And I think there are very few shows that escape the mold, and I think obviously The 100 is one of them, is one of my favorite shows. And then I think also iZombie might be another one. But it'll be interesting because I think if Sabrina is kind of modeled after the Riverdale / DC shows, then I won't like it because it kind of feels like they're a little bit soulless in a way. But if it's modeled after something like iZombie, which is also based on a cartoon, or sorry, graphic novel, a cartoon, it has that darker edge and it has that sort of combination of embracing its comic book elements, but also being like quote unquote real, you know. I feel like Sabrina could really benefit from that kind of a formula, whereas opposed to something like Riverdale, which I feel like is kind of abandoning its comic book roots to kind of try to be a straight drama in a way. And I think that for Sabrina particularly, I know that they're like, oh, it's going to be darker. But Sabrina was such a hit and it was so charming exactly because it was a little bit campy. And so I feel like basing it on comics, even if it's dark comics, they still have the option of embracing the campiness a little bit too. And I don't know. I wish I was more excited about this because I really did love the original Sabrina, but I just feel like there's such a risk of it just becoming like a factory show, and I don't want that to happen because I think that would be such a shame. I don't know if that makes sense. I'm being a little bit harsh on these shows.
Well,
but
I think that it's, I don't, it's all going to come down to the showrunner, the writers, all of that stuff, you know?
Yeah, and whether they want to make it like a cinematic universe for Archie comics, you know, because then right, it is going to be similar to Riverdale.
Right. I'll be interested to see if, you know, they tap some of that team to come over, but it's gonna be one of those shows where I think that it sounds really good on the surface, but you'll have to figure it out once it comes out, you know, if it's for you or like, and not even just like for you, but like for the collective you of anybody that's interested. But based on the synopsis, it has potential to be really interesting. And it's been a while since we've had a witch show around, you know?
Well, I guess The Vampire Diaries was kind of a witch show, yeah, but The Secret Circle is certainly... Mm-hmm. They should just bring that back. That was a good show.
Yeah, no, you're a big fan of that one. I never watched
it. I love that one.
Yeah.
All those girls are like TV superstars now. It's pretty funny.
That's amazing.
Yeah. Like one went to Teen Wolf, one went to The Originals, one went to... Well, one became a movie star, Britt Robertson, and the last one went to Black Sails. So it's kind of fun how they spread out. But anyway, it was a good show.
I had no idea Britt Robertson was in that. I love her.
She was a main character.
Oh, wow. All
You're really missing out. But I think the cancellation of Secret Circle made room for The 100, so it all worked out in the end, really. But yeah, sure. I will say, I don't know. We'll have to wait and see. I love Sabrina the Teenage Witch. I don't want them to mess it up.
Yeah. I am kind of glad that they're doing something different with it, though, because I think it would have been really easy to make it. I don't think a reboot is what Sabrina needs, you know, or like a revival is what Sabrina needs. I think that, although the movie, the Sabrina the Teenage Witch movie was a little bit darker, but yeah, I mean, like in general, I feel like, and also I don't think that the original Sabrina would work for today's audience, so... Mm-hmm, it'll be fun, and it'll hopefully give some creative minds the ability to do something really cool with it, just to like open the world up in this particular way. So, okay, we have a little bit more TV news to get through. First and foremost, just very briefly, wanted to bring up that Trevor Noah's contract on The Daily Show has officially been renewed through 2022, which means that he'll still be around through the 2020 presidential election. And I don't know if any of you guys listening tune into The Daily Show, but I, as much as I love Jon Stewart, I really like Trevor Noah's approach to how he's been handling things. I think that just like his point of view on specific topics are really thoughtful, and the way that he conveys those across the series or like each episode is just, it's very interesting. And I really like tuning in to see what he's got to say on certain things. He's not like my main source of news, but I do always like to hear what his take on stuff is. So it'll be really fun to see what he's able to do now that he's got a little bit more time to play around, and... yeah, should be fun to see what he's got up his sleeve.
Sure, yeah. He's been an interesting addition, definitely.
Yeah. It's not like, it's just like different. And I think that that's probably why they're so happy with him, because I don't think the show would have worked if he had just come in and tried to be John 2.0. So it's good that he's kind of found his little space and he's doing things his way.
Yeah.
Because nothing is more irritating than when somebody gets, replaced, or they have to be replaced, and then you're just like, oh, you're just trying to be this person, but you're not, you know?
Yeah, for sure.
And then one final bit of news here. We have a little bit of book news that rocked the online fandom. Hank Green, who, of course, we know from the Vlogbrothers, also John Green's brother, has announced that he has got his first novel coming out. The book is called An Absolutely Remarkable Thing, and it centers around a girl who is an art student in New York City. Her name is April May, and she finds herself at the center of an international mystery. She gains a bit of internet fame after a video that she records of a giant robot sculpture in Midtown Manhattan goes viral online, and she just kind of skyrockets to fame as the news spreads, and also as similar events happen across the world. So this is kind of an interesting premise, and then Hank did an interview
with his wheelhouse.
Yeah, Hank did an interview with the New York Times where he said that, ironically, the story was inspired by his struggles with internet fame and the anxiety that he feels. So it's like the anxiety is like coming to life in these very tangible, large forms. So, I mean, they do say write what you know.
Yeah, I know. Suspiciously autobiographical, I was going to say. Yeah. But I guess like brother, you know, like it's the authorship runs in the family, I guess. I'm not surprised. Yeah. I'm surprised it took him this long.
He's, you know, like I think that when I was younger, back when there wasn't so much content on YouTube. I was a little bit more into the Vlogbrothers, checking in to see what they were doing and stuff like that. And he's got a very unique voice, at least there. And I know that they script their videos and stuff like that to make sure that they hit a specific time frame, and also so that all of the content that they want to discuss gets put across in whatever, like the 3 to 6 minutes that they're talking and stuff like that. So it'll be interesting to see like what he does with this. I'm sure it'll be different from John's style. So, yeah.
Oh, yeah, absolutely. Yeah. I think, I don't know, it'll be interesting to see for sure. I'm not like a massive John Green fan, but I don't have anything against the Vlogbrothers. I think they're educational and entertaining. And I will be curious to see how Hank Green sort of embraces, because there's no doubt, like he knows a lot of things about a lot of things, yeah. And one of the things he knows the most about is the internet. So seeing him try to tackle that in a novel should be really, really interesting.
Yeah, I totally
agree. And relatable, probably, for people who spend a lot of time and who know John. Like it's perfect too, because the people that know Hank Green are the people that are online, so they will find this book interesting. So it's kind of like a win-win.
Yeah, yeah,
that'd be cool.
It's funny because, like, I don't know. I mean, like, we put ourselves out there online. But I try not to think about it because the show doesn't feel like we do that. You know, even though we do. And if you stop to think about it, it is like a cause for anxiety that you put so much of your thoughts and your hopes for like the future out there, even in our own little way. So I don't know how he does it on a much grander platform and has continued to do it. It gives him this much stress, you know. I feel like I would go crazy. So
I know. Ah. Interesting. Very interesting. We will keep you guys informed. Let us know if you're planning on checking out this book. So that brings us to the end of the news. As I said at the top of the show, we did have a lot of news this week, including some Artemis Fowl casting news in the form of a certain Dame Judi Dench and the news that Jamie Lee Curtis will reprise her new role in the Halloween movie and Harry Potter bedroom collection from which was hilarious, and some Game of Thrones news and news about Damon Lindelof's Watchmen pilot and a bunch of other stuff. You can check it all out over on Hypeable.com. And when we come back next week, we will have brand new stories to talk about. Now, we're going to move into TV show of the week now. And I am so excited, guys. News schmooze. I want to talk about my absolute, like, hands down, now it has been official that it is my favorite comedy, which is The Good Place, that came back this week. And I am just so thrilled with how The Good Place season 2 is going. I was lucky enough for Hypeable to get to preview the first 4 episodes of season 2, and only, you know, the 2-part finale has aired by the time this comes out, so I'm not going to talk about obviously the other 2 episodes. But I will say that The Good Place, obviously, to give a little bit of background before I start talking about it, it stars Kristen Bell and Ted Danson and a bunch of like other people that are amazing and awesome. And it is set in this afterlife where Kristen Bell is like a quote-unquote bad person who is disguised in something called the quote-unquote Good Place. And you know, she has her fake soulmate, Chidi, and her neighbor, Tahani, and someone else called Juan Yu. Maybe has another name. I won't give too much away. But basically, The Good Place is fantastic. It's made by Mike Schur, who you know from The Office and Brooklyn Nine-Nine and a bunch of shows like that, and obviously Parks and Rec. And it's amazing because it not only is it super diverse, which is very, like, and geographically diverse, is that the right word, like culturally diverse, which is something that I feel like American shows struggle with, even if it's like ethnically diverse. So that's really good to see. And it's very smart and very funny, and it's also like a mystery type of comedy, so kind of like How I Met Your Mother, except better, kind of like the Lost of comedies. It's very, very funny and very good. And I loved the first season. And the first season finale kind of threw everything for a loop. It did a huge twist. And when that happened, I talked on Hype about how disappointed I was, because it basically threw everything up into the air and sent it to a very uncertain place. And I am now convinced that season two is going to be at least as good as season one, if not better. I think that even though everything is really uncertain right now, I think that the show is moving to a really interesting place. And I will say my worry with season two, and I won't say anything because I know Pam hasn't seen it either, so I'm being like super vague, which is hard. But my worry with season two was basically that it was going to move away from the character development story and be more like sketch comedy. You know, like I feel like it was, I worried that it was going to focus more on kind of, it was going to be like a more of a traditional sitcom in that it kind of reset every episode and kind of focused on the same basic premise and kind of had these archetype characters that were going to be kind of thrown into these wacky situations without ever really progressing. But that is not the case. Like they are moving along with an arc that's going back, as I am now going back and rewatching season one, it's clear that it's been in place the whole time. And I just think it's so smart and it's so great. And it's really one of the, it's a standout comedy, I think, absolutely standout comedy. And I think some of the characters, Chidi and Tahani in particular, are like tied for my favorite character. And they might be some of my favorite comedy characters of all time. Like, I think they're amazing. And I just cannot recommend the show enough. And I will say, if you, like me, were a little bit apprehensive after the season one finale, then you don't need to be, because the show definitely is on course. It's going somewhere, which is great. And what kind of place that is, who knows? But it's definitely going somewhere. And I know you've at least seen season one, right?
Yeah, I've seen season one. And I think that it's, you're right, it's so... it's so smart and it's so great to see that this show has found its audience, because mm-hmm. it's a little bit out there. And I think that it definitely takes like 2 or 3 episodes to like really kind of get into the mindset of what they're trying to create. But mm-hmm. it's like, it's so good. And I don't know why I doubted that it would, because Mike Schur has a great track record. But I just love that it, like, it owns its weirdness. And it's just, like, it's so charming and so great. And I'm really excited to check out the first episode back, because it's wonderful.
Oh, yeah. Oh, yeah, absolutely. And the first episode back is actually a two-parter, which I thought was pretty good. I thought some of the gags went on for too long, and again, adding to my sort of apprehension about where the show was going in season two. And then the third episode, for some of it, again, I was a little bit like, I'm not sure if, you know, I don't really find that funny anymore. But then they kind of, you know, I think it's the third episode when they begin to set some things in motion that really pay off in the fourth episode. And it makes sense to me now why they released 4 episodes for press preview. You know, I feel like if they'd only released the 2-part finale or the first 3, I feel like maybe the reactions of early reviews would have been a little bit different, because it takes a while for the season plan to reveal itself. But once it does, I think it really pays off, and I am just, I think that this show is really special and it's really nice. So, Pam, I put Outlander on for you, but I don't actually know if you're caught up or not.
Well, I mean, there's only been 2 episodes this season. I've seen the first one, so close enough.
Okay, well, then you can talk about that one.
Cool. Outlander is back, and I am only slightly behind. I haven't had a chance to watch the second episode, but the first episode is, oh my god, it's so amazing. I saw it at Comic-Con too, but then I saw it again when it aired, and it's just so, so good. We get the aftermath of the Battle of Culloden, and kind of get a feel for like what goes on, and it goes back and forth between Jamie's time and Claire's time. She's in Boston now with Frank, reunited, about to give birth, and like, oh my god, this episode though too, you guys, the first episode back, if you've seen it, it's so heart-wrenching for a myriad of reasons. Like, I can't even decide which part is like the worst part, But I'm really excited to watch the second episode because it's the season's off to a really great start. And I hope that if you're watching, you're enjoying it too. Let us know how you're liking it. I don't know if we have any Outlander fans that listen, but I love this show.
We do. Good. We definitely have one, Meg.
Oh, nice.
And she asked me specifically if we were going to talk about it on this episode. So I'm glad that you are almost caught up so you can talk about it.
Yeah.
And I don't actually know. She didn't tell me what she thought about the show.
Let us know. And
yeah.
I'll do a little like Outlander check-ins throughout the season. It's going to be a good season.
Yeah, definitely. You should.
Yeah. It feels really weird because usually Outlander comes back towards like the end of the summer or like even earlier. And this year they pushed the release date back. So we're getting it a little late and it feels really good to have the show back.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I've actually been watching Outlander as well, sort of very slowly, because I'm on the 13th episode of the first season, and I kind of watch an episode here or there, and I get, like, I think it's so funny with this show, because I think that it is stunningly beautiful, and I really am taken with the history of it all. I think we've talked about this before. I'm a little bit put off by, like, the... Like, it's, you know, there's a lot of, like, obviously sex and stuff in it, and I think that's fine, but I think some of the ways that they do it is, like, a little bit uncomfortable, and I don't know, I struggled with that a little bit, and then I have, a huge problem in that I really don't like Jamie, which I think it's hard to be an Outlander fan if you don't like Jamie. I really don't like him. I think that he is, like, I don't know... I don't know. I don't have to get into it. I just find him hard to contend with some of the things he says and some of the like reactions he has to things. But, you know, obviously he loves Claire and that's great. And yeah. Claire is amazing.
You know,
and I just met his sister and she's great. I like her.
Oh, yeah. You recognize where she's from?
Is it Doctor Who?
No, well, yeah, too, probably.
Is it Merlin?
Yeah.
Oh, my God, is it? Oh, my God, now that you say it. It's Freya,
yeah,
right?
Yeah, it's Freya.
Oh, my God. I did not even put that together. Mm-hmm. But now that I totally
you know.
See it.
Yeah.
Now I know.
She's great.
But I didn't like Freya, though.
Oh,
I
yeah.
I do like her in this
But she's
one.
Great in the.
She'd been
Outlander.
More like this.
Yeah, yeah.
Yeah.
I will say to Jamie's defense, I get where you're coming from, but... given his time frame, he's very progressive, which is sad.
True.
Which is sad, but I understand why it would be annoying, like some of the things that he says. But at the same time, like he gives Claire a lot more leeway than most men from his time would.
Absolutely.
And gives her and more leeway than Frank does, I think, too.
Yeah, well, I don't really know a lot about Frank yet, but absolutely, I think, you know, just the fact that he has to give her leeway in itself, like, has me, like, my hackles raised. But no, I totally understand that. I think my issue with Jamie, honestly, is that I find him to be a little bit, unintelligent, you know, like, a little bit thick-headed. And I don't know if that's just because I don't like him or if that's, like, legitimately a trait of his, but... I don't know. It's tough. I'm going to keep watching, but
I'm glad.
Do find it a little bit of a stumbling block.
You'll have to let us know how you fare with it as you keep going.
Yeah, if I warm up to Jamie. Mm-hmm. I find him a little bit like, I don't know. I like Claire, though.
She's
so
the best.
I'm
she's
halfway there.
Amazing.
Yeah, she's fantastic.
Yeah.
And I like the witch, her
oh,
witch
yeah,
friend.
Yeah, yeah. Oh my God, what's her name? Her name is...
How that lasted... Gwyneth? Gwendolyn?
Yeah. Oh my God.
Gwyneth? Gwendolyn?
No, it's
Am I even close?
Oh my God. It's
Gillis? Gillis?
Gillis? Gillis, yeah, Gillis, yeah.
Something like that.
Yeah, she's amazing too.
Guinevere?
And also like shout out to Murta because I know you probably haven't gotten too much with him yet, but he's the best. I think he's like the unsung hero.
Yeah, I like him. I think he's great. I think there's a lot of really good side characters in it. I think sometimes mm-hmm. like the gender roles, like I get it. I get that it's like period appropriate, but it just annoys me.
I know.
You know, but still. Yeah. Anyway. I also did want to briefly talk about the, I know we're running a little bit long, but I did want to talk about, because I last, when we talked about the bold type, and we actually did a special on it that I don't know if that's out yet, otherwise it's coming soon, but I actually finished it. I finished the season, and I just wanted to sort of catch up on and check in, because I know you had a bunch of thoughts about the season as a whole that you didn't want to share because I hadn't seen it. So I'm wondering if you want to share them now, and I have a little bit to say as well.
Oh man, I feel like it's been so long. No, it's just, that show's so good. I really, really liked the last episode too. And it's funny because I was reading this interview, I think it was on Variety, with the showrunner, where she said that because they didn't know if they were going to get renewed, and they still haven't technically gotten renewed, that she wanted everybody who was watching to feel satisfied with where we left all of our girls, but also curious about what might happen next. So like a very, she wanted it to be like an open-ended ending that also kind of made you feel at peace with where you could imagine them going, which I guess that they kind of did. I think that everybody kind of grows a little bit. I love that we learn a little bit more about Jacqueline too, in that last episode. And it's just like, again, round of applause for bringing to light a very important issue that deserves all the spotlight.
Agreed. I think that in the last couple of episodes, and really throughout the season, Jacqueline has been a standout character. I almost feel like, and this might be, I don't know if this is a criticism or not, but I almost feel like she's much more interesting than the main three. And like her story, there's a lot of depth to it that I feel like, and that's, I feel like that might be my, a slight drawback for me in the latter half of the season, because I genuinely like the bold type a lot, and I hope it gets a season two, and I think that it's a really wonderful sort of aspirational kind of escape show. And obviously the relationship between Kat and Adina is just astonishing, and like nothing you've ever seen on TV before. But one thing that did start to grate on me a little bit, and that might say more about me than it does about the show, but it's just that there came a point when these girls' lives and careers, it's just too easy for them. Like, it's too much. Like, I feel like by the end of the season, I know I get the wanting to wrap it up, and it's not that I want them to suffer or fail or anything like that, but I just feel like there comes a point when you're seeing these three young, beautiful, thin, attractive, talented girls who literally everyone around them falls in love with them, and they just get everything they want, and the only conflict comes because they have too many options. You know, like you have Sutton being like, oh no, I like this guy and I can totally have him, but I'm going to break up with him for drama. And then there's this other guy who also likes me. What am I going to do? And then in my opinion, she picks the wrong guy, but whatever. And Kat is like, I'm so successful and good at my job and I keep being promoted. This is frustrating. And then Jane is like, I'm so good and challenged. I don't know which job to have because I have several jobs and I'm just like, oh my God.
Can we spoil now? Is that okay? Can we?
Yeah.
Okay.
It's fine.
My hope, since she's decided she's going to ditch Scarlet for whatever that other magazine is that she fails because she realizes that she still needs nurturing. Because the thing about Jane that doesn't make sense with that particular position is that she's going into an environment where they're expecting her to take the reins, but she's so hesitant at Scarlet.
She's not there.
And she's not ready. Yeah. So I kind of hope that, like, I think that if they do that, if they show a little bit more of, like, the turmoil of what it's really like to be in that industry, maybe it's just like that's not a big part of the show, whatever. I think it would make it a little bit more realistic.
No, but that's what I want to.
Yeah. And again, like maybe nobody cares because they're not in the industry too. Like I feel like it hits a little closer to home for somebody like people like you and me who like understand how it kind of works and have been in those environments. And it's not easy to climb up unless you're amazing or you put in the work, you know? Mm-hmm. And we haven't seen them put in the work, so it feels a little, like, it doesn't feel satisfying. Like, the career aspect of their job doesn't feel satisfying.
Exactly. I feel like when this show started, we were seeing three talented girls at the start of their career moving up, and sort of the show isn't, it, you know, it's obviously, it's very progressive and amazing in that it doesn't focus on the three girls battling each other for success, right? They're taking away the element of sort of catty girl fights. But the issue with taking that away, and this maybe reveals like a bigger problem with dramas, is that you take that away, there are no obstacles. And I know that that sounds wonderful, but that's not reality. You know, and that's what frustrates me, is that basically what the show is saying is that if girls stop fighting each other, then they can do anything. And I'm like, that's great, except there's a whole world out there full of people who also want to do all these anythings. And there's not enough room for people. So how do you carve out a space for yourself? And I think an interesting conflict that the bold type was kind of set up to explore at the beginning of the show, which they kind of lost focus on because it just became this big like group singing, hugging thing, is that when you take the cliche conflict of women fighting women away, what else stands in their way? Like, can we get to the actual, real, non-petty issues that woman that anyone really that treat these women as people and have them deal with, like, you're in this extremely competitive industry, you know, whether you are doing social media or writing features or doing the fashion, obviously you are good, but maybe not like a prodigy. Like, I don't think we're being told that any of these women have something that no one else has. You have an amazingly supportive boss, but, you know, there's other people in this house and there's even cutbacks and all these things. None of them were affected. I feel like there are stories you can tell that are more gripping than just, let's see these girls. Because you have to have conflict in a TV show. And I feel like the conflict in season one became, I have all these things, options available to me, and I don't know which one to pick. And I think for a millennial audience, and I don't know, maybe I'm wrong. Maybe this is not what people want. But what I want is, okay, so let's give them some conflict and show them dealing with it rather than just giving them all of these amazing things and seeing them be really moody because they don't know which one of these great options to choose. Because I find that instead of being like inspired by it, I found it really frustrating to watch. And by the end of the season, I was actually really, like, you can hear it now.
Yeah.
I'm really annoyed with the show. And I don't think that's how it wants me to feel. And maybe the question is, well, you have everything you want. Why are you still sad? Maybe that's season two's plot. I don't know. But right now I'm just like, oh my God. Like,
it's really,
just pick a job.
It's really funny you mentioned that, and actually it makes me feel a little bit better, because my one gripe, if I'm being nitpicky, is that sometimes this show makes me feel like shit because I'm trying to do what they do and I can't do, like, why doesn't everything fall into my lap? And maybe I'm just not good enough. These are personal problems, but, like, honestly, like, these are, like, when you're trying to break into any kind of publishing industry, like, these are the things that go through your mind. And then you see shows like this where, like, or even, like, younger, Sex and the City, I guess, is, like, an older example. It's like, how are all these people making it, but I can't make it? Like, I want to see a show. Maybe I just need to write a story about my own life where, like, somebody's struggling a little bit more because... It's or maybe these are the girls that always get the jobs that you want, but then, like, these maybe you're still not good enough. So,
but the thing is about the show is that these are the girls you knew in high school who were smart and pretty and successful and best friends and so nice that you couldn't even be mad at them or hate them because they were so sweet, but they just got everything. And I feel like that's the girls that these three girls are, and I feel like that's a really weird thing for a show to put on screen. And I think it is interesting that that's maybe the kind of show you get when you remove them fighting other girls. Like, they are just, and you know, even a show like Friends, like, people, Friends gets so much flack for being unrealistic, and I think it gets it unfairly because I do not think it's unrealistic. And I think the way that they handled career stuff was really amazing. And I think that maybe the bold type could learn a little bit from that, because they allowed its characters to actually, it's like, struggle realistically.
Do you know what's really funny though is that, like, looking back on the season, there was a point where they could have brought in, like, they really, it was a missed opportunity to not dive further into the fact that Sutton is not rich, you know, because everybody else can afford everything. And and she talked about how, like, oh, if I don't get this job, like, my I'm not gonna be able to, like, live in New York because I won't have money, and, like, I have student loans and all this stuff. And I was really hoping they would explore that, but they didn't, because she got the job. It is also very I don't know, I kind of wish, like, one of them would have gotten fired when they were doing the layoffs, because I think that that was another missed opportunity to tell a very real story. And, like, I get it, like, you want to, like, escape reality and see these girls succeed, but I think it would have been more inspiring to see one of them get fired, have to pull themselves back up, and then, like, figure out how to make it work, because, like, I don't know, that would have been nice.
Yeah, I think at the end of the day, and that's something that maybe we are a little bit more attuned to because we are in this situation and we've been, like, interns in these kinds of places and we've seen how difficult it is. And, and just seeing them just, because obviously a part of the show is that they make a bunch of mistakes, right? And what happens when they make these mistakes? Nothing.
Yeah, I mean, honestly, the person like, whose storyline, like, career-wise is the most realistic is Katz. Because she's a product of nepotism, you know? She, like, mentions that on the side. And, like, I there have been many times where I've been passed over on a job because somebody's parents know somebody else, you know? And it sucks.
Right. And she keeps making mistakes, like, potentially that have really big consequences. Anyway, we're only talking about season one, and I'm aware that.
But I do really love the show, but, you know.
Same. I do too. I think that that's the thing, is that I just thought, based on the first couple of episodes, that it was going to be a show about a group of girls trying to make it professionally. And it feels like by the middle of the season, they had already all made it. And now it was like, okay, now what? And I was like, no, wait, it's too easy. But that said, again, going back to the positive, the end of the season set up some really interesting conflicts, especially for Jacqueline, who I feel like she's just become the new main character of the show. And I would be very curious to see how, especially, I guess especially Jane progresses now with her writing career, but also Sutton, because it seems like her fashion stuff, she did kind of have a little bit of a cat fight actually in season one with the other girl, fashion girl. But, you know, there's some really interesting stories to tell there. And I think at the end of the day, I'm much more interested in the careers than their love lives. So I hope that they dive more into that in the season two that they definitely should be getting. Anyway, we have talked a lot about these shows and we hope that you appreciate our conversations about them. And we would love to hear what you think. Moving into listener feedback now, we have a couple of tweets and emails. So do you want to go ahead and start with Nikki's tweet?
Sure. Nikki says, I've almost finished season one of Wynonna Earp. Why did I wait so long? Also, thanks. Hypeable hype. What? Thanks for what?
Oh my God, I hope you're enjoying
just for,
it.
Like, for Wynonna Earp.
And Laura Morrow says, we already did this one. Stephanie Merrill says, crap, I like the Jumanji trailer.
Same. Just embrace it, Stephanie. I really like it too.
I had the exact same reaction. I was like, oh crap, you know, I don't hate this.
You know what I'm really excited for? I don't think you liked the first one, but Kingsman comes out this week. I'm really excited to go see that. Speaking of things that I feel like people are very conflicted over.
Yeah, you'll have to let me know how it is. Mm-hmm. And then we have a couple of emails, and the first one, do you want to get this one from Alex?
Sure. Alex says, I just want to say that I really enjoyed episode 158. I think, this is me. That's very nice. I think Pam did a great job keeping the show entertained and involving the audience. It was really great to finally put a voice behind some of the commentators that are brought up on the show. I feel like I'm very behind on my podcast. I used to listen on my way to work, but recently I moved way closer to work that now I need to find a new way of listening to you guys. I'm also going to need to reactivate my old Skype account in case you guys do more house calls. Can't wait to hear more from you guys. You're doing such a great job. Thanks, ladies, for keeping me entertained and up to date in the entertainment news that used to just pass me by. Smiley face, Alex. Aww. Well, thank you, Alex. That's very nice. That's
wonderful.
I'm really glad that you guys liked that episode, by the way, because I was really nervous about it. So I really appreciate that.
Yeah, we raised the bar. We need to do another one of those. Yeah. But I just want to say to Alex that if you need like places to listen to podcasts, not just ours, but podcasts in general, I listen to podcasts when I am doing grocery shopping and when I'm cleaning.
Yeah.
So those are like very good opportunities to get some distraction in your ears.
Mm-hmm. I listen when I'm cooking and when I'm on my lunch breaks and also when I run or walk the dogs. So,
Yeah. When I run,
when I run. I didn't say I run the all mythical the time. Times like, that when I run.
I have to listen to like pumpy music. Otherwise, I get too annoyed with myself.
I need to listen to something tired. That like... It's like either really it has to be the right thing though, because you're right, if you're not interested, like you can't focus. But sometimes when it's really funny, it's hard to, because like I tried to listen to that podcast Dad Wrote a Porno when I was on the treadmill and I was laughing too much and I almost fell off, so I was like, this, I can't do this anymore. But yeah, so maybe not something That's too funny, but something still intriguing.
Yeah. And Elizabeth, we have an email from Elizabeth who says, "Hi, ladies. I just wanted to let you all know that I finally took Selena's advice and I started watching The 100. And let me tell you, I am hooked after one episode. I will keep you updated as I keep going. Lots of love, Liz." Oh my gosh, after one episode. That's fast. That was faster than I got hooked. So I would be very, very excited to hear what you think as the show progresses. I have a couple of people coming to me recently saying that they are getting into the 100. There's a girl called Amber on Twitter as well. I don't know if you listen to the show as well, but she came into my inbox screaming about something that happened in season 3. And I was like, I know. I get it. I'm sorry that I personally inflicted this on you. But I'm glad you're enjoying it. And yeah. Keep us informed. If you are listening to the show and you want to talk about The 100 or anything else we talked about this week, you can email us, hype@hypeable.com. You can also find us on Twitter at HypeableHype, and you can find us on Hypeable itself, which is hypeable.com. And those are probably the primary ways that you should leave us feedback, so you make sure that we see it. And if you are a Patreon, or if you are interested in becoming a Patreon, then you can find us over on patreon.com/hypepodcast. And it's where we do our videos and our bonus discussions. And this week's bonus discussion is going to be a preview type episode about the fall TV that we are most or least excited about. So if you're interested in checking that out, then head on over to Patreon. And otherwise, we will see you back here next week for episode 162. Have a great, safe, good, hopefully not very stressful rest of your week. And we will see you back here next week. My name is Selena.
And my name is Pamela. Bye.